So welcome, Steve Swami Steve. How about that for an introduction? Steve Behrman. I love your political understanding of what's going on in the world, and actually, to give you some credit, beyond the world as well. Very impressive to have you here. Swami Beyondananda, but that's when he's wearing his better hat, and you can't see him today because I don't have Zoom here, but... he's also a Swami, aren't you, Steve?
Oh, yeah, the Swami is hanging out, and thanks to the magic of radio only, we can change costumes, and he can appear immediately whenever it's needed. So,
you think he can manifest all around us?
Yeah, Swami's been practicing ubiquity, trying to be everywhere all at once.
Well, Steve, what do you think? I mean, you said... what basically what's next? You had three beautiful things which I wrote down and they're not on my screen, so what are they?
I think we are living in a time of excess content and minimal context, so I'm going to ask three contextual questions to help us look at where we're at now, what the implications are, and then what are the positive directions for the future? So the three questions are, what so what, and now what? So what so? Our current political situation, And I think the situation is best expressed by something that I swear to you happened in May. I have two colleagues, and both of these colleagues, I'm working with them very closely on various projects. They both are, I would say, evolutionary. They are really looking at moving past this, the old paradigm of this versus that, the old paradigm of exploitation, extraction, extortion, and extinction, and recognize that our political system as it is cannot really be the container for the change that's required. So this happened within 24 hours.
Tell the people at home what happened in May.
So this is what happened in May. It was really right after it was leaked that Roe versus Wade was about to be overturned. So I'm on the phone with one of my colleagues, and he expresses his greatest concern. He says, my greatest concern right now, given what's happening with the Supreme Court, etc., is that we are going to become a Christianist dictatorship.
Lord.
Okay, so that was his take, that those elements are, through Donald Trump, et cetera, who certainly has a capacity for ruthless rule. His concern was that that's where we were headed. So next morning, I'm talking with this other friend, and he also spontaneously... his greatest political concern, and that is that the Democrats will steal the election in 2022 like they did in 2020.
Oh, come on, really?
That's right. Now, these are two highly intelligent people, highly aware. And this is those are the two distinctions that they have. So I'm here to tell you that that in a certain regard, they're both correct. That when I put out my piece in 2020 for political transformation, I called it a two-step program. Okay. And the first step we've accomplished, or at least we did in 2020, that first step was making sure that Donald Trump was not president anymore.
Right.
That was very important because even if you're trying to deal with a sociopathic system, having an actual sociopath in charge is not really highly recommended. However, I said that there was a two-step program, and the second step would be that the American people had to confront an even greater Goliath that we need to make Goliath down. And that is the what used to be called the military-industrial complex, that is now the military-industrial, pharmaceutical, media, high-tech complex. And, since the days of Eisenhower, when he left office 60 years ago, not only do we have this military-industrial complex, but we've added to it big pharma, big agriculture, the media, and the thing about big pharma, and now, of course, high tech, mm-hmm. and the thing about big pharma is that we are one of the few countries in the world that allow drug companies to advertise on TV. Very few countries do that. I think there may be three countries that do that. And so because of that, the drug companies exert a tremendous influence. And so what I've noticed over the past 2 years or since the COVID crisis mm-hmm. is that my progressive friends, and I consider myself a lifelong progressive, my progressive friends have generally, I call it Nazism, where people choose to not see what they don't want to look at.
Right.
And they've bought the official COVID narrative, hook, line, and sinker. They refuse to look at alternative views. They refuse to look at facts that are actual facts but are called disinformation because they contradict the official story.
But I want to interrupt you for a sec on that.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
very, and this is something that's perplexing to me as a pretty good intuitive, actually. It's really hard to tell what's really a fact.
Of course it is. Of course it is.
I mean, and you don't like the word disinformation, but I'm going, what else? What can we call it?
Well, I'll give you, let's see, where can I start with this?
Well, I think of it as engineered thoughts.
Yes, and I think that the most sophisticated engineering. I mean, of course, there's the Trumpists and some of the toxic forces on that side. But I think the most organized and hence the most dangerous force is the mainstream media and people thinking it's okay that things are being censored. I'll give you an example. A friend of mine, somebody I like and I know, wrote a review of Robert F. Kennedy's book earlier this year, The Real Anthony Fauci. Now, what was very unusual about this review, it was a scathingly negative review.
Okay.
Scathingly negative review. Now, would you like to guess what was different about this book review?
Well, no, I don't know. I think it was supportive or what?
No, the reviewer never read the book. And proudly said he never read the book.
Ah, well, isn't that a common thread, huh?
And so what that is that it was a reassurance piece to reassure other progressives that they could trust Anthony Fauci. And of course, that book was really about corporate capture of our so-called regulatory agencies. So I want to get back to my initial question. The what so question. And the what so question is we have never before been so toxically divided.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, and so there is a.
Or influenced. Hello?
Hello?
Influenced, you know?
Well, yes, exactly. And the thing is that through this, the way that the division is being fueled is through social media. That keeps feeding you more things that you agree with. And also, I'm an equal opportunity masochist. So I'm on the list of both political parties and, various progressive and conservative sites. And it's pretty much all the same. They are focusing on the worst aspects of the shadow of the other side, but God forbid ever looking at the shadow of their own side. So in warfare, like we've seen with the Ukraine war, when war happens, then we devolve into focusing on the atrocities the other side has committed, and it is forbidden to even address the atrocities that our side is committing. So we are at that point giving.
And there's a long history of those too, which
it happens all the time.
Yes.
And so what we have right now is we have these two sides that are largely unwilling to confront the shadow on their own side. Now, I may not be a big fan of Liz Cheney, but I have to say that her wanting to investigate Donald Trump is politically courageous. It's essentially saying, I'm going to sacrifice my political career and my time in Congress in order to take a stand against what I perceive to be a toxic force in the body politic that needs to be stopped. I don't see any Democrats, however, taking on the toxicity of wokeism, the toxicity of very scary, we'll talk about this later, gender, this genderless society that people are looking at creating. We don't see anybody on the progressive side other than RFK Jr. and a few very courageous journalists confronting the censorship that's taking place, where it's not that they're preventing, it's not that they're censoring this information because it's not true. They're censoring it because it does not fit the official narrative.
Yeah, because they're steering our brains.
And there's no Democrat standing up against that.
Mm. And so, why not? Why do you think? What so?
Well, the reason why they're not standing up against it is that they can lose their career and their credibility and become forever irrelevant. You know, when people go into a career, I mean, you know, you and I are fairly independent in the world, and we're not really dependent a lot on these institutions. But consider, let's take an example, okay?
Yep.
Let's take an academic, somebody who is a biologist, let's say, and he or she is working at a prestigious university. And in order to survive, you have to have grants. You have to actually have grant money. And here's somebody who wants to study something that hasn't been studied. Actually, it's been independently studied, but not at a university. And that is, are unvaccinated children healthier or less healthy than kids that get vaccinations? Not only looking at susceptibility to those illnesses that they're vaccinated for, but just overall, are they more healthy, vaccinated kids, or are they less healthy? Well, if somebody wanted to study that at a university, there would be absolutely no money for that. And let's say this academic who has now 20 or 30 years in and is looking at, you know, continuing that career till the end. If that individual were to propose such a study, they would be blacklisted. One of the points that RFK Jr. points out in his Anthony Fauci book is that, you know, because Fauci's been in power in that institution for about 40 years, one might liken his power to J. Edgar Hoover's power over the FBI during his reign, that he had tremendous, but the difference between Fauci and Hoover is that Fauci is one of the key people through his, I forget the name of his official organization, health organization, government organization, is the one that disperses grants to all these universities.
Uh-huh.
So if you propose a study that does not, that's not in keeping with promoting the pharmaceutical industry, you'll never, you're dead. You're academically dead. You're a corpse. Okay? So it's, you know, I mean, Liz Cheney is physically going to stay alive after she gets defeated in the fall. But the point is that...
But she's clear. She'd rather clear this up than stay in power.
That's right. That's
right. Takes
so
a lot
taken
of
her stand.
And you know that.
Robert F. Kennedy has taken the stand, et cetera, et cetera. And Matt Taibbi is kind of coming around. Glenn Greenwald, Mark Crispin Miller, Naomi Wolf. All of these people have ventured beyond the progressive bubble and have begun to... Tulsi Gabbard, another good example. She's my current political heroine. As soon as she was the one, by the way, who was a congresswoman from Hawaii.
Supported
Bernie Sanders. And when she found out that there was cheating that deprived Bernie Sanders of the nomination, she resigned from her position in protest.
Oh, wow.
And since that time, she's been demonized by the Democratic Party. She was one of the candidates who ran for president. She was at the debates, one or two of the debates, but she has been canceled by the Democratic Party. So what's happened, what I see happening.
So that's a little like Fauci and the science game, isn't it? It's just the same idea.
Exactly. And what, Fauci in branding himself as co-branding with science, the failure there is recognizing that who controls the science? Who is it that determines what studies get done? Mm-hmm. So you can say, well, there's no study that's been done. If you go back before 2019, and Mark Crispin Miller has done that, you find hundreds and hundreds of studies that show that masks make no positive difference. Hundreds of studies. But he almost lost his position at NYU because in his class on propaganda, he said, well, we need to actually look at all of these studies and examine them. He got his class canceled. Interestingly, my podcast partner on Front and Center, Michael McSenti, and I interviewed Mark Crispin Miller last month.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the YouTube, we just reposted a censored YouTube version, but the YouTube took it off. It removed it. It
wow.
censored our interview.
Wow.
Ostensibly because Mark Crispin Miller mentioned a few things about COVID that was not in keeping with the official story. So I'm seeing the same tribe that were the progenitors of the free speech movement in 1964, that were the that wrote "Our Bodies, Ourselves" about body sovereignty, are going along with mandatory vaccinations to be a citizen in society, and allowing for this censorship, not because they know it's happening, but because they choose to not know that it's happening.
Yeah, but you know what, Steve? I find it really, really crazy-making because it's like I want to understand the things that you're saying, and I want to know that I don't want to know because it might be risky and all that. But I find sitting with it all, I still am totally perplexed. I want to be in the truth. One of the things about vaccine that I keep reading about is everybody has a different response to it.
The main thing about the vaccination issue is the way it was handled. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine, let's pretend we were living in a sane world.
Mm-hmm.
And February of 2020 comes around, and we see that there's this clear and present danger in the world. And so the president, who unfortunately was Trump at that time, there is an authority who says all hands on deck. And in order to deal with this pandemic that really nobody knows exactly how it started, nobody knows exactly what it is, we want to make sure that every treatment that we can possibly use is used so that we protect the people of this country. In 2019, there was a simulation that was done with all of the World Health Organization and all of these national leaders of nations and representatives and so on, mm-hmm. including one of the key people from the CIA. And it was a simulation of a pandemic. And what was noteworthy about the simulation was, so first of all, it was almost exactly like what happened.
So that was
COVID.
Before it, right?
Right before. It was several months before, about 4 or 5 months before.
So it was predictive. Do you think it was designed
that way?
But
there was nothing, but the entire meeting had nothing to do with treating people. It had only to do with control of information.
Wow.
Okay? That's the point. And so there was no concern about how many people are really going to die, but it was really, how do we convince people that that more people are dying from this thing and that more people should be fearful about it? But if it was all hands on deck, then what happened, what I discovered in April of 2020 wouldn't have happened. April of 2020, I get a call from a close friend of mine who's a chiropractor. I've known him for 40 years. And he's telling me about an associate of his, he didn't name any names. He said, but this guy has treated 30, this is early on, 35 cases of COVID. No long COVID, no hospitalizations, no death. Not using ivermectin or hydrochloroquine, but using holistic antiviral means. My friend said, now, of course, he can't tell anybody or he'll lose his license.
Of course, yes.
So the whole point is that if you really recognize the history, the battle between the medical monopoly through the American Medical Association and the alternative practitioners like homeopaths and chiropractors, is that they have been driven underground.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there was actual
and
lawsuits that
too.
Chiropractic industry won against the AMA some years ago that essentially proved that out. So what I saw is that instead of having every remedy available and giving people free choice to take what they take and protect themselves and other people in whatever ways they can, those were shut down immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I also, for my radio show, interviewed Andrew Saul, who was a worldwide expert on the use of vitamin C.
Okay.
Right after the pandemic, the Chinese government hired him to help develop a protocol for using intravenous vitamin C, which was later adopted by hospitals in New York after people were dying on the ventilator. He was deplatformed. Facebook took his page down because he talked about vitamin C. So what we're looking at is, you know, it's easy to find bad guys on both sides, but I'm focused on, because I'm a progressive, I think it's very important that we acknowledge our own shadow so that we steal the thunder of the other people and that we simultaneously look at the other side and find the truth that's hidden behind the lies so that we can bring forth and acknowledge that truth and not leave it to those folks to be expressing that truth.
You mean if enough of us really had some information and really stood by it, it wouldn't be a monopoly, right?
And actually what it means is actual conversations. You know, there was no second opinion. There was no conversation. The media decided that they were going to adopt the propaganda.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was no conversation with people like Dr. Malone or Dr. McCullough, who developed these protocols to deal with COVID treatment early on and had success. But
and
they were
did
not
they make it
to...
through? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, what happened was there was a what was his name? McCullough. Remember his first name? McCullough.
Okay.
He testified in front of Congress in 2020, in July or August of 2020, about doctors around the world developing these treatment protocols. He was shocked that there was no university in this country when COVID hit that was interested in any treatment protocols whatsoever. The official story was, go home and wait until you're so sick you have to go to the hospital. So many people died unnecessarily, not because of unvaccinated people or anything like that. They died because they did not have access to treatment that would have prevented hospitalization. They did not have access to early treatment at a time when that treatment might have had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. McCullough testifies in front of Congress. It was a congressional committee. I think Senator Ron Johnson, conservative Republican from Wisconsin, aired the testimony. And because it was a Republican, the Democrats, immediately there was this wave of that's disinformation. We can't listen to that. You know, I remember back in the day when the followers of Rush Limbaugh called themselves ditto heads proudly. Called themselves ditto heads because what he says, that's me. Well, now the new ditto heads are sadly on the other side. You know, I live in Berkeley, California. I see people wearing masks outside still. And it's, you know, and I'm looking at that and I'm going, we've people have given themselves over to a very one-sided, distorted, non-scientific narrative. So I don't want to go too deep into that because there's a lot more that we want to cover.
Yeah, but I want to do. I want to go back to something I said at the very beginning because I'm so darn brilliant. Is by the time you listen to a bunch of stuff, you don't know what the hell to believe. I'm telling
you
that I know that for a lot of people.
I love the my friend Caroline Casey, visionary astrology. Her saying is "Believe nothing, entertain possibilities."
Okay.
And in that liminal space of not knowing, there's a lot more wisdom that could be gleaned rather than narrowing one's focus to buy into a narrative, particularly when fear-based narratives narrow the mind, making it easy for us to be manipulated by fear and anger.
Mm-hmm.
So being open-minded, you know, my approach has always been, somebody comes and tells me, I'm never getting the shot. I go, hey, that's great. Somebody comes and tells me, I've just gotten my third booster. I go, hey, that's great. People need to do what they believe is best for them, and they need to also have access to as much information as possible so that they're doing informed consent.
But one of the problems with our society is there's never, ever been this much information available, and there's never, ever been such a dearth of information available.
Well, you hit it right on the head, and that's because of the devolution from something we used to call a free press to
a bought
media.
You're right, absolutely.
We don't have a free press. That doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. We have media that's owned by four companies, and very susceptible to top-down regulation.
Mm-hmm.
You will not ever find in mainstream media anything that is sharply critical of the vaccination program,
mm-hmm.
In fact, even vaccinating children. You know, you got to go to the Epic Times. You got to go to the anti-Chinese party, Communist Party right-wing site. You got to go to National, what is it called? I forget. Just a number of right-wing sites. But Epoch Times, they're the only ones who will publish anything by Joseph McCullough.
Really?
Now, McCullough is a solid citizen, but he was made part of the 12 deadly websites that you can't go to. So people are not allowing themselves, they're not choosing to look at alternative information except to reassure themselves that it's been disproven.
Well, that's interesting, as Epic Times has only been coming to me recently, and I really thought it was great, and then I really saw some stuff I didn't espouse or I could not agree with at all.
And exactly.
So it's not one thing, is it? It's like you have to really distill, their quality.
Once you look at the left wing and you look at the right wing press, you're going to see two things. You're going to see in the left wing, you're going to see truths that are not being told by the right wing. And on the right wing, you're going to see truths that are not told by the left wing. And then you're also going to see a very distorted, toxic, one-sided narrative on each side,
mm-hmm.
demonizing the other side, creating stereotypes and straw men so that we make sure to associate only bad stuff with that side.
Mm-hmm.
So if you, I read the Epic, I get notices from the Epic Times every day, and I notice there's always stuff, you know, that shows that black people commit crime.
Mm-hmm.
But they're also going to point out, did you read about the guy who was killing Muslims in
Yeah, I
in
read
New
all need
Mexico.
no, I started to, but I didn't get it read, yeah.
Okay. For 25 points, who was it who was killing these Muslims in
It was a
Albuquerque, New
Muslim,
Mexico?
wasn't it? Wasn't it a Muslim?
Yes,
Yeah.
it was one sect who didn't like the fact that his daughter was consorting with the other.
Yeah. So, you know.
But so, oops, that didn't fit the narrative, right? But before there was any narrative, the left-wing press is promoting this idea of hate speech, hate speech, hate speech. When Mark Crispin Miller was working with his students in the Zoom class on propaganda and said, in order to understand propaganda, you need to look at all of the, you need to look at this other side related to the masks and 100 studies prior to 2019 saying that they don't make any difference. Did you know that that was classified as hate speech?
Wow, really?
Yes, hate speech. So hate speech now is anything that they don't want you to know.
Or that you don't disagree with, that you disagree
Yeah,
with, yeah.
that's right. And progressives are cheerfully blind to this because it's too challenging. They don't want to know about it.
Well, I have to go back to the same old thing I've said several times today, which is I get such a gut ache. I don't know who to believe half the time. Not half, but you know.
Well, you want to actually, this is really, really true because all we have, again, as the Swami would say, beliefs lie in your head, truth lives in the heart. Unfortunately, we have been put on so many head trips and manipulated so many different ways by, did good people have been hijacked into bad ideas?
Well, and people
When you're
say I
focusing
only
on the truth
follow,
in your heart, what?
when people say I only follow science, I go, wait a minute, who's paid for that particular science? And I say that every time, and they
Yeah, but
go,
you see that. Yeah, but they don't. But that's exactly the question, and that's why everybody who calls themselves a progressive, you owe it to yourself to read Robert F. Kennedy's Real Dr. Fauci book, and look at all of the citations. He's got a new book out, which I just downloaded as a PDF, called A Letter to Liberals,
Okay.
and I think that's really about him saying, let's really look at our tradition of open-mindedness and justice, and not be hijacked into a very, very, very narrow view of what justice is, that is about identity politics and toxifying the narrative of anybody who disagrees.
I think that's it's making me think. You've got me thinking again. Oh my gosh, you always do that, don't you?
That's dangerous in America. That's very dangerous in America.
Well, yeah, because the other
Well,
thing is, I wanted to, and I don't want to change the subject totally because you're fascinating and we could go on like this for a long time, but I keep feeling like it's all going to change. I don't know whether left and right are going to flip and become interchanged, or I don't know what's going to happen, but something is going to be very different. And I can feel it being catalyzed now, and we don't know what it is. At least I don't know what it is. Maybe you do. Does that make
good.
sense to you?
I think we're getting there. When Michael McSenty and I launched our podcast last fall, our first slogan was writing our new story together. He's coming from a more conservative standpoint, I'm coming from a more progressive standpoint, right? But
Okay.
we agree on a lot of things. We're coming from different places,
But
but
I'll
our
stop you
eye
for
is
a
on the
sec. You're
same
not
prize.
coming from left or right, then, are you?
Well, we were at one point, but now we're not.
Now you
Now
say
we're
progressive.
recognizing that we need to rise above that,
Good.
and our new slogan is off the political battlefields, onto the cooperative playing fields, seeking the whole truth together.
Oh, that is so good. Because I keep saying to people, you know, nurturing is the greatest power we have as a species.
Well, that's true. And unfortunately, what we are because we're being manipulated by head trips, we are losing contact with our connection with the wisdom of our hearts. And
Exactly.
that's why so many people go, I don't know what to believe. What does your heart tell you? And it's not that your heart is going to, there's a resonance And, you know, in a certain regard, everybody has to find their own truth. This is a very, there's a lot of paradox in this world. And we have to be able to tolerate that paradox as we make our way through this so-called chaos that we're experiencing right now. So I think that there must be a breakthrough on the way. So here's how I'm looking at it. So what's so is we have this toxic divisiveness.
Right.
And I want to give you two statistics that'll it'll either make you laugh or make you cry. recently, or both, there was a recent survey showed that 70% of Democrats believe that Republicans are bullies trying to force their worldview on everybody else. Same survey indicated that 70% of Republicans believe that the Democrats are bullies trying to impose their narrative on everybody else. Okay?
Yeah.
That's where we're at. And 70% of all people want to find a way for us forward to work together.
Right.
And solve problems. So simultaneously, we're in this caterpillar to butterfly stew.
Okay.
In the chrysalis, where the caterpillar, the ways of doing things, the caterpillar, by the way, in the course of its lifetime, devours 26,000 times its own weight in food.
Wow.
So we are a caterpillar. Our whole civilization is the caterpillar civilization based on exploitation and extraction and hence domination. That organism is now in the chrysalis being transformed. And we can see caterpillar parts dropping everywhere. We can see the old system falling apart in every way. We can see the political system failing us. We can see our economic system failing us. That in looking at how do we address issues like climate change, who pays the price? The ordinary person at the bottom pays the price.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that falling apart. And at the same time, there is this burgeoning awareness that if we don't come together, we're going to fall apart. We're working on a new song called The Heart of the Matter is the Matter of the Heart.
Aww.
Matter won't matter if the whole thing falls apart. And so the whole idea is that what has been missing in our civilization, particularly in our country, is a sane and sacred center that transcends both religion and non-religion, that is about the connection that we have with the web of life and the web of love,
mm-hmm.
with one another, our own connection to whatever we call that which is transcendent, whether we call it God or Great Spirit or the unknown or the great mystery, whether we see it as whether we're atheists who see it just as this cosmic universe that's out there, that's an infinitely developing universe, or whether we're based in one religion or spiritual path or another, there is a common understanding that we are looking for. You know, Martin Luther King called it beloved community.
Mm-hmm.
There's a word that's been used called communitas, which is this sense of connection that we have that we want to bring forth, that comes forward in times of crises, and this is a time of crisis. So the so what is that we are now at the pivot point where the old way is ready to fall apart, that the planet-devouring caterpillar is ready to give way to the butterfly that lives very, very lightly on the earth. I want to put in parentheses. Now, there is the problem with the current top-down World Economic Forum narrative that seems to be about dealing with climate change and so on is that it is a top-down dictatorial imposition that is benefiting many, many, many people financially and not really dealing with the problem of restoring the web of life, the microbiome in our soil. It's mm-hmm. about artificial food. It's about shifting this whole idea of, they're not allowing farmers. They're really limiting farmers from growing food mm-hmm. in Europe. particularly in Holland. And, you know, it's going to create a food shortage, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, with the Ukrainian thing, too, there's a huge food shortage accruing from that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And who's going to suffer? The people at the bottom are going to suffer the most. Mm-hmm. As another parenthesis, during the COVID lockdown, the 1%, the billionaires made out like bandits.
I know.
While we were mask debating about the mask.
That's heartbreaking. That's heartbreaking, Steve.
But it's true. And we need the truth shall upset you free. So now I'm going to present the now what, okay?
Okay.
So
that's what we need.
Bruce Lipton and I wrote a book in 2009 called Spontaneous Evolution, Our Positive Future and a Way to Get There from Here.
Okay, yeah.
And at the time, we looked at spontaneous evolution as a noun in the future. Well, now we see it's a verb in the present. It's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if we offered a three-step program, which is, of course, guaranteed to work four times faster than 12-step. Mm-hmm. And the three-step program was evolutionary awareness, evolutionary intention, and evolutionary practice. So evolutionary awareness, that's, you know, being aware that we are at a pivotal time, you know, and I think that more and more and more people are recognizing that we are at this crisis opportunity moment. Many people are aware that we are at an evolutionary moment. And because of that, there is evolutionary intention. People want to be part of this change. Many people are saying, you know, these are the times we were born to be in.
Exactly.
This is the time, mm-hmm. you know. And so there's a lot of that feeling of evolutionary intention. Then we get to evolutionary practice. I don't see it. How do you practice evolution? So that's been my question. That's been the question that I've been in. And so over the last 2 years, I've not really been able to travel to do my Swami shows. However, I've been very, very fortunate over the last year to become involved with two projects that are not on the radar now, but will be before the end of this year.
Oh, goody. What are they?
Well, you know, in Spontaneous Evolution, one of the, in our chapter on healing the body politic, one of the experiments that we focused on is something that happened in Reno, Nevada during the 2000s, 2003 on, called the Conscious Community Network.
Okay.
And Richard Flyer, who was a business owner in Reno, and also had done community organizing, essentially during the in the run-up to the Iraq War, the second Iraq War, after the they imagined their weapons of mass destruction, he and another group of, you know, peace people were meeting, and they remembered what Mother Teresa said. She said, "Don't invite me to an anti-war march, but if you're having a peace gathering, I'll come to that." And so one of the questions that came up in this group is, how can we create something positive to unite people? Because even in those days, people were on different sides, and there was they realized that in Reno, there was a lot of division over politics and religion and so on.
Of course.
And so the question that they posed was, what can we do to bring people together in this community? And so they had a meeting, and they invited trusted connections that they had who had influence in various parts of the community in Reno, and they posed the question, what can we do all together that we'll all agree on is a positive step that we want to do? And what they decided, this being at a time when was an invasion of big box stores, we want to actually revitalize the local economy. Let's create a buy local network. And so that's what happened. They created a buy local network that was hugely successful. Then they created a food network where they aggregated all of the resources around food. They brought together evangelical Christian organic food growers and secular, progressive, organic food consumers. And lo and behold, these people were cooperating because there was a greater vision. Then they created the Get to Know Your Neighbor Week, which was picked up by the local newspaper. Long story short, through this activity, they transformed the local economy in Reno, Nevada. And instead of protesting against Walmart, they successfully did what Buckminster Fuller suggested. Instead of fighting the system, create something better. Richard was also very much influenced by the Sarvodia movement, S-A-R-V-O-D-A, V-O-D-I-D-A-Y-A, and Dr. Ari in Sri Lanka. He just spent 6 months in Sri Lanka. That's a whole other story. So now Richard is writing a book called One Tribe, and it's really about creating symbiotic networks in as many locations as possible that are doing two things. They are creating what we're calling resiliency and thrival. What happened in Sri Lanka, you probably know that there was a huge crisis there. The president had to flee the country.
That was fairly recent, wasn't it? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But what was happening prior to that is there was food shortages in Sri Lanka, very corrupt family ruling there.
Mm-hmm.
But because of this network of village economies that was established over 60 years ago in Sri Lanka by Dr. Ari, they already had the networks in place on the ground to create this resiliency and relocalization. So the first thing that they did, this is in March or April of this year, they had people, they had, 20,000 villages throughout this throughout the country. They had people bring all of their food, their stored food, their grown food, to the local early child care centers. And at the early child care centers, people prepared all of this food to make sure that everybody was fed.
Wow.
So that was an emergency thing that had to be done. Now, if you're imagining an emergency here in this country, let's say you're dealing with a flood or a hurricane or a fire, the people who are dealing with that aren't asking each other, hey, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Are you a Christian or an atheist? Nobody really cares about that, because the present situation is what you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working with Richard on his book called One Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
We're almost done with the book. And the purpose of this is to help
people Richard Darley, is that right?
Richard Flyer, F-L-Y-E-R.
Okay.
And right. I don't know, his website may or may not be up. We're in the process of getting this underway.
Okay.
But he has a network with 20 communities in Florida ready to get started with this.
Wow.
We're calling the focus of what we're doing intentional mutual benefit. He's a biologist. So using, if you define the term symbiosis, which is in contrast to parasitical, a symbiotic community is one where there is mutual benefit. So the term intentional mutual benefit is not a brandable term. It's one that we want to get it out there as a meme to everybody,
okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
We want everybody to steal that meme. And so the networks that we are creating right now through his Symbiotic Culture Lab will facilitate people starting these. It's a very sophisticated and yet very simple system. The ground rules is radical inclusivity. You know, when they did their food network in Reno in, 2005, there were people said we should only include organic farming. And as thinking about it, Richard said, no, we should include everybody. We want to make sure everybody is included.
Mm.
And so in the process of doing that, one of the biggest farmers in the area became an organic farmer.
Oh, wow.
Because he was exposed to it.
Wow.
So unlike the cancel the people that you don't like, include the people that you disagree with. If you all agree that we want to create a world of intentional mutual benefit. Now, the elephant and donkey in the living room, because it's both political parties, the elephant and donkey in the living room is that the current system that we have is a predatory system that is 180 degrees out of phase with the aspirations of humanity, going back to the Sumerians who first proposed a kind of golden rule. So we have been ruled by the rule of gold by default.
Mm-hmm.
So now we need to bring together this golden rule in the form of intentional mutual benefit. So what would happen if you wake up in the morning and you say, how can I move forward intentional mutual benefit today?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The other project that I'm working on that's very parallel, you can look this one up. There's a really excellent book called The 12 Habits of Unity.
Okay.
By Elaine Park, P-A-R-K-E.
Okay.
And Elaine is a long time, as she was a marketing expert in corporate America.
Mm-hmm.
And about 30 years ago, she decided to turn her attention to using those skills to help people live the golden rule. Mm-hmm. And she developed this system where every month has a habit to practice. And all of these habits are ways of increasing our connection with the web of life and the web of love, with one another and with each other. And each habit is a practice, and she's put it into, they're not abstractions, they're actually active instructions. So the habit for January is help others.
Okay.
It's something to proactively do, and on, be grateful and do your best, all of these things. So I am very excited to be working with Elaine on a year-long intention experiment where people practice these habits on a monthly basis
together. To get together, yes.
Yes, I mean, you can do it on your own, but we're creating ways for people to do this together in concert,
sure.
Like an intention experiment, where we actually, by doing this intentionally, we actually can certainly impact the world at small and possibly the world at large. There's a great quote from Martin Luther King saying that when those who want peace are as organized as those who want war, we will have transformation.
Good. We can do that.
And this is how we get coherent. We
mm-hmm.
create a coherent practice that we do every day that improves the lives of the people around us, that puts smiles on people's faces. So here's an example. This is something that works for Richard Flyer's experiment in symbiotic community
mm-hmm.
and intentional mutual benefit. And it also is a way of practicing helping others. So Trudy, my wife Trudy,
mm-hmm.
she loves making homemade chicken soup. So what she does, instead of cooking our own chicken, we buy a chicken, and then with the leftovers from the chicken, we make soup.
Okay.
And so she goes to the place where we get our beautiful organic rotisserie chicken, and she sees that there are all of these drippings from the chicken. And she says, would you put those in a little container, and I could take that home, and then I can cook the chicken in the drippings? Well, over time, she realizes that, my God, this makes the best foundation for chicken soup. And so now she'll come there on a Friday. She'll call them earlier. Can you save all the drippings for me? And she salvages these drippings. Okay?
Oh, good for her. Wow.
Now, Trudy makes popcorn that's been called legendary.
Oh.
legendary popcorn. People get addicted to this popcorn. And we were selling it through a winery, a wine tasting thing locally, because people wanted it and so on. So Trudy goes there a couple of weeks ago, and she says, anybody here like popcorn? And the guy's eyes light up. And so last week when she came to pick up her free drippings for us to make soup, she dropped off her legendary popcorn. Now, I want to say something, that this was not a quote-unquote trade. It was not barter. It was a unconditional gift, just like those guys were giving the unconditional gift of that new resource, the drippings, to Trudy. She's unconditionally giving them the popcorn in gratitude for what they've been doing. So this is intentional mutual benefit.
Wow, I love
This is also a way of doing something that Richard found very valuable when he did the networks, the food networks and the neighbor networks in Reno. He says it liberated frozen assets from the community.
Hmm.
Things that could be done, things that could be used, but were not being used because they were not part of the monetized system. Right?
I love
so
this.
all of a sudden now, I mean, what would happen if all over the country people would go to the local Whole Foods or whoever is making these rotisserie chickens and say, hey, I would like to get the gleanings from this. By the way, Trudy, we now cook certain things in chicken fat, like my mother used to do when I was a kid in Brooklyn, because, you know, the fat rises to the top and you can use that chicken fat. So all of a sudden, there is a hidden resource in every community of these droppings that can be used to make the most healthy bone broth, soup, et cetera, that can feed people.
That's so wonderful. I'm very excited about all this. Yeah. And we
so
have
we're
to,
going to launch our
12
Habits of Unity in January. Anyway, so
great. So it's not launched yet? There's not a website or anything?
No, these are, as I say, I'm jumping the gun on these, but I'm committed. I'm officially employed working with these two projects. So I know that we're going to have these, but they're in the process of being brought forth. And so we have this context right now. We have three contexts that I'm calling heartland security, which will make homeland security obsolete.
Good.
Our true security is in the land of the heart. By practicing these habits of unity, we bring people together at the heart, which makes it much more easy to solve the issues that divide us. The land aspect of it has to do with the web of life, our economy that's based on ecology. And through the symbiotic community lab that's being launched in the next 2 or 3 months, we will be helping people create these circles of resilience and thrival. Resilience meaning let's make sure everybody has enough food to eat. Thrival, how can we create create food and energy self-sufficiency in this community so that we can be free, so that we are not at the effect of globalism and this top-down imposition.
Wow.
That's the land. And then community, which is security, which is community, through my podcast with Michael McSente, Front and Center, we are bringing together, we are seeking the whole truth together, bringing right and left, front and center, to face the music and dance together, to turn the function and the fun, the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction.
Wow. This is, and we have to end this, but it will never end because you've got us going here, Mr. Steve Behrman. And I thank you so much. And so have everybody check your podcast, but also check into, I love the 12 Habits of Unity. And I said to you earlier, we kind of were finding out that nurturing is our greatest power, but this whole thing is nurturing. It's nurturing life, nurturing land, nurturing one another. It's wonderful.
You know, one of the things that Bruce Lipton says is that, evolution follows patterns, and the patterns of culture follow the patterns of evolution. And so just as we evolved from fish to land, to amphibians, to land mammals, to finally humans, the evolution of culture began as mariculture around the water. And then it became amphibious as we began to do agriculture. Technology is kind of the reptile phase where we're looking at the mechanics of things and building this technological infrastructure. And now the next phase of human culture is the mammalian phase. And the mammalian phase is about nurturance and nourishment.
Yay.
We are on the threshold of that if we can make it. And I think we will.
It brought tears to my eyes. And yes, we can make it. Our hearts are really committed to this. You know that. And
yes.
Thank you so much, Steve. You're just always inspiring. You're more than inspiring. You really got me going here.
Well, good. Thank you for being a paradigm shifter. And we'll, I know you'll become a co-sponsor. It won't cost you anything. A co-sponsor of the 12 Habits of Unity when we launch.
You bet. We're right there. Me and Bob both. Yeah.
Okay. Okie dokie, Smokey.
Much love to you and Trudy, and thank you so much. And go ahead and speak for Swampy. Okay. Swami.
Swami says, namaste and namasko.
Thanks, Swami. Much love.
Thank you.
Bye.